Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Welcome back to part two of The Guilty Feminist with Susan McComa and Millie Bobby Brown. Stranger Things fans, welcome. Enola Holmes fans, welcome, welcome. It's time to get back on the mics with Millie Bobby Brown. This was an incredible show and we gave it lots of breathing time. So we've got two parts for you. You are spoilt this week. So plug in and get ready for the fun. Hello, 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 and welcome back. Did you have a lovely interval? Excellent. Are you ready for more questions now? I didn't wait because I assumed you were. any objections? No. Okay. What we did, Millie, is we got this jar and we told the audience to put their questions in it. We collected them up. Are you ready for some audience questions?
Yes.
Okay. All right. this is from someone called Mackenzie. Just give us a cheer if you're Mackenzie.
Yay! Right at the front. Hi.
Excellent. So Mackenzie asks, what feminist characteristics of your characters, such as Eleven, Enola, or Madison, inspire you most?
Ooh. It's quite tough. Superpowers.
Yeah.
Eleven has superpowers, and yeah. I feel like that might probably be her feminist trait.
Also, she fights for the abuse of her mother. Like, she stands up against the system because of what they've done to her mother. It really feels very feminist for me.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's kind of interesting because when I was, like, 10, when I started shooting, I was like, this is so fun! I'm going to shave my head. I'm like a tennis ball. And then I'm older now, and I really found that that Eleven is so influential to me, and she does actually represent a lot of what a young woman is, despite the fact that she's so supernatural. Like, she is so vulnerable and she is so heavily influenced by the men around her, and she has to stand out against that, not only the society of, you know, the 80s and kind of the supernatural, but actually just like the fact that her boyfriend is telling her what to wear and her dad is telling her what to wear, and then she has this scientist that wants to kill her, and it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of like what real life is. You know what I mean?
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Truly excellent.
So I would say, yeah, Eleven is a good representation of that.
Do you want to pull
awesome.
One out?
Yeah, well,
wait.
No, sorry.
Thank you, Susan.
I did warn you about the tone. Okay, so this is a question from Adelina, Yay. Is that, am I saying your name right? Adelina, hello. Thank you, so much voice. For your big question. And can I say, gorgeous handwriting.
We stand that.
Okay, can we expect Florence to release a fragrance as well?
Susie's just been red. What to say? Fully earwig, like...
What is that? Can we expect Florence to release fragrance as well? No, this is what... I know exactly what you're talking about, but I was like, Florence, that's Millie. But no, I'm Millie, yes.
Florence piecing it together. She's piecing it together. Wait.
So Florence is the name of your beauty,
yes, beauty brand. For people yes. that don't know, which, you know, that's fine
I do
too.
Know. No, don't give
I'm
me that.
I'm saying it's fine, and I love you either way. Basically, again, for people who don't know, Florence is my beauty and skincare brand that I created so that young people could, like, not do a 72-step skincare routine and, like, not know what to do with their skin. Because, like, growing up at 12 years old, people were just throwing makeup on my face. And I was like, oh, my God, like, why do I have, like, pimples everywhere? And everyone was like, here's this and here's this. And it was, like, crazy products that were so overpriced and also just very... not for me, you know, that's anti-aging at 12 years old. And I was like, oh, God, like, I don't get it.
That's weird.
So I hate that for you.
Wow.
And so I thought, actually, I'm going to create something for young girls that they'll understand, that I can understand. You know, I am the consumer. I actually have no idea how to do it as well. So that's what we did. And it's a really cool... Anyways, for fragrance, yes, something potentially is in the pipeline, or maybe not. I'm bored. I get really bored really quickly. Ideas come in and then they fly out and then I'm doing something else. ADHD.
Do you have ADHD?
I can't self-diagnose because I self-diagnose. I'm a hypochondriac like my nan.
I have it. Well, I got diagnosed with it.
Okay, yeah. That's understandable.
But
sorry.
It is... No.
So sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
I think... But I actually almost don't know... Because the last 2 years of lockdown, we've just been flipping on screens and stuff.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I'm exhibiting a lot of the traits.
Oh.
And actually, I don't know, but I do know.
Cured?
Well, I don't know. What I will say is this, is I think one of the symptoms of having ADHD is you actually don't have the focus to go and get diagnosed with ADHD. So you saying, I don't know, I haven't been diagnosed, is that the time? Like, you know, it's sort of, it's a good symbol that you want.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to pull out another one. This is from Zipporah, is that, or Zip, is that, yes? Is that how I pronounce your name?
Oh, you're right there.
Yes.
Hi.
Zipporah asked, if you could have any other job, what would it be and why?
Actually, I was asked this the other day. I would be a caretaker at a care home. And I don't want everybody to be like, oh, she's the sweetest. Like, I just love old people. I actually cried the other day at Tesco's. I was in Tesco's and I was with my boyfriend. Oh, so I keep just saying him. Anyways, forget about him. And I was in Tesco's and I was like, roast dinner, stuffing, get a little bit of gravy. And then I saw this old woman. I was like, oh my God, you know when they shake? So I was shaking. And I was like, I'm going to get her a bouquet of flowers. So I got her the biggest bouquet of flowers. And then she gave me a kiss on the cheek. And then I started crying. And I was just with this old woman in Tesco's while my boyfriend was like, chicken, gravy, like, what are you doing? And all the cashier people were like, what are you doing? And I was just holding this older lady. Anyways, caretaker, because my nan was just the best human on earth. And all her friends were also really cool. And they just talked about fun stuff. And they were mental. They were really mental. And together they like hit each other. And it was just like, it was entertaining. It was really entertaining. My nan used to throw pillows at her friends and be like, you know, like, go away, make me a cup of tea. And it was just perfect. So I would definitely do that. So entertaining. It's like
when I'm very old, you may come and look after me.
Oh, thank you.
If the acting,
I'll bring you flowers.
If the acting doesn't keep on working out the way it is, you know, there's
no,
a job.
No, I'll be there. I'll be
there's
there.
There's a job.
Yeah.
Daisy asks, who inspires you to be a better person? Who inspires you?
Well, not just the women on this table, because actually I would like, this is like not even funny. I've told you guys enough and the people here listening is going to be annoyed, but I really, really do look up to the both of you so much, as well as Helena.
God, I've never expected to say that.
No, it's not like you just pried it out of me.
It's amazing.
No, it is. I really do.
Seriously, who inspires you to be a better person?
No, you guys taught me about feminism, and that I can give you, you guys really helped me navigate that because I was on this quest for help. The woman I would say that inspires me most would be my grandmother and my mum, the matriarch in my family. Mm-hmm. They're everything to me. Oh. So the women. And my little sister is the best.
Oh, sorry.
10-year-old sister, she's got it all about Amazing. It, and she's really cool. And then my nan was the best, and my mum is also just like, she's just so much cooler than me.
It sounds like even though you were looking for the formalized concept of feminism, it was already living in your heart and your home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I never truly understood it, and really neither did my mum, you know, because it's like actually funny. Like, I tell my mum things like, Mom, like, you know, this is the way the world is now. And she's like, you're so woke. I love it. You know? And she wants to learn, but she doesn't know.
Yeah.
I even said something. I was like, oh, my God, stop gaslighting me. And she was like, what? You know? And she's like, what does that word mean? And I was like, Mom, this is insane. Like, you don't know what gaslighting means? So I had to, like, give her a whole spiel. So it's actually kind of interesting. Like, she's learning, too.
Yeah.
And we're both kind of going on it. Yeah.
I think this space is for learning because I'm always learning all the time. I learn from every guest. I've learned things from, you know, listening and to you talk, you know, as a young woman. You can learn something from everyone you meet.
Mm.
And I am delighted that you've learned something in this space. And I hope lots of your fans also find feminism here because you're all welcome and part of our family. Mm. Susan?
I have a question from Ellen Jones. Make yourself known. Say hello.
Ellen Jones.
There's Ellen.
Purple hair.
Indeed.
Of purple hair fame.
Has been a guest on The Guilty Feminist before.
Ellen asks, did you acquire / steal anything from the set of Enola Holmes to keep?
Ooh. Well, I do steal.
Full stop.
No, I do steal a few. You know, it's not like I'm too obvious. I do ask, and if they say no, I still do it. But I'm saying it's, you know, it's like, it's little things. I love to keep stuff in my memory box. They powdered me for a makeup shot with like this huge powder puff.
Oh, nice.
And I stole that. But that was it. And maybe Helena Bonham Carter's sweet.
That's sweet that she threw into
it's
your mouth.
Molding in my memory box. No. What else? On Stranger Things, I've stolen a lot. Yeah, like every year it's something different. I used to steal my tattoo templates and just like while I would go around on set or on other jobs, I'd still have it on. People would be like, you need to take it off. Like, you're not playing this character. And I'm like, yes, I am. But yeah, no, I like it. It's just a good like memory. It's keepsake, you know? Yeah.
Lovely.
It is a fun thing to do. Theft.
Try it.
Have you got any mementos from Enola?
I'm trying
to
think.
You're willing to admit?
Oh, I think I took home some socks. I'm not joking.
No, but you can't. I have like underwear from like 5 years ago from a job.
That's the thing that I take back is underwear because I'm like, it's been on my fanny.
Yeah.
So we've got another question here from Eva Duckett. Eva, where are you? Eva or Eva?
Oh, there
Eva,
you are.
Eva? Yes. Is it Eva or Eva? Eva Duckett, and your question for Millie is, what was your favourite scene in Stranger Things?
From what season?
Oh, ooh. Good question.
Any of them. God, I hate you. Let me think. Well, I would say to film, it's different because you watch something, it was horrific to film, or you film something and it's like, oh God, it really didn't come out the way I wanted it to. I would say, I mean, there's so much from season 4 that I would probably say is probably my favourite, but from seasons in the past, I think something about season 1 and how like innocent and naive I was, like I crave that back again. I don't have that anymore. I'm so aware now of my body and how I look. And not in a bad way. It's just I'm very aware of the way my face moves on camera now. Yeah. Like I feel light more and I drift more towards that. And, you know, it's like there's certain things that I wish I didn't know. And because when I was 10 and that performance was so raw and real, people loved that, I think, more. And I loved it more as well because you're seeing a real girl in a real world and it's like real. Whereas now I'm like, hey, you know, and I know my lines and I really didn't come to set prepared at 10.
Yeah, of course.
So everything. No, I really didn't. I just came out, and that's what worked.
So interesting because it is such an authentic performance. Mm. I was blown away because I got into Stranger Things a bit later.
Okay,
I knew it was 80s. I thought it was going to be a bit scary for me. I've heard it's scary, and my husband Tom Selinsky, the producer of the show, watched it religiously. And I caught up later. I think maybe when I watched Enola Holmes, I then thought...
Oh, really? Oh, was that when?
I really liked you in Enola Holmes, and I watched Enola Holmes because of you.
That's not the way it's meant to go.
I mean,
no.
How awesome is that?
That's true. I thought, Susie's doing a show in which she's being a badass suffragette queen. Got to watch that. Then I was like, oh, she's really good. Who's she? Tom was like, Stranger Things, I've been telling you. So then I go back and watch all of Stranger Things, and I thought I'd only watch one season, but I was gripped. I was meant to be writing a book, I'll be honest. And I was like, shit, I've just got, you know, that one more thing. You know, you know when it gets embarrassing when Netflix goes, are you still watching this?
Yeah.
Seems like very late.
I've been there. I was doing that today with Drag Queen. It was bad. I'm on season 12 and...
There's just so much to consume.
It was so much. And I was just like, oh God, it needs to stop. But Jada won, so it was fine.
Okay.
I was on set and I was screaming like this morning, like doing my job and blood everywhere. And then I was like, I need to go and see who won. It's the only thing that keeps me lighthearted on set. Otherwise you get quite depressed.
Yeah, you need those things that sort of elevate.
Because studios are really, really dark. I mean, imagine being in this room 12 hours a day and then working in it. It's like no light and only men, and it's scary.
Yeah.
Mm. I hear that.
That sounds like my worst nightmare. And then I went, shit, that's my job.
That's your job.
Oh, man. Oh, God.
But yeah, I did watch that performance and go, what, like, you've got a serious talent, and it is extraordinary to see a child come to a role like that. And it was very riveting, and it was very feminist because that whole storyline about the way that your mother had been used, and there was a lot of The Handmaid's Tale in it to me. That's those same sorts of themes, and your power. That the there's sometimes you see people with T-shirts that say, "We are the daughters of the witches you didn't burn," and I felt like that. I felt like she was rising up on behalf of her mother, and I loved that when she went back to see her mother. Sorry. Spoilers, but let's be honest, you've all seen it. She can't save her mother, but she can save the future.
Yeah.
And it wasn't this nice, neat little bow where the mother goes, oh, you're back. You know, it was really, it was the anger of the damage done that fueled her rage and therefore her power, but also her focus and her understanding of connection and friendship. So I think it's a remarkable show, and you are remarkable in it. And had it not had someone like you, or specifically actually you, in the lead, I think it could have just been a sort of schlocky 80s fun retrospective.
You know what? I always think about it and I go, what if I wasn't in the show, right? And someone else, because 600 girls went for my role.
Wow.
So had someone else gotten it, would I have watched it? Mm. How would it have gone? Yeah. I mean, it still would have been a great success because of the, you know, Winona Ryder's in it, so we can all just shut up. Yeah. But like, you know, I can't enjoy it like other people enjoy it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, of course not. You know,
not even the other scenes, because I know it. You know, we sit on a table like this and say you are the crew and we're doing the read-through and we read through all 8 episodes and it's you already know it. But it is really exciting when you're sat there and someone dies and you're like, and everybody bangs the table really hard. It's a rowdy read-through.
Is the actor who's died, though, crying a bit because they've lost their job?
No, they all kind of
like, someone's died, and that person's going,
No, that's
horrible.
No,
it was actually really sad. Jacob Montgomery, who plays Billy, we were kind of all like, is he sad? And then he was like, yeah, it's okay. Like, it's fine. I'm going to go be a successful actor anyway. And, you know, like, it was still okay, but we were all, it was kind of like the first big, huge death of a main character. And it's kind of scary. But then we, like, look around and we're like, it could be us. Like, and then I'm going to be crying, you know, it's not going to be funny. I'm going to sue all of you.
But it must be, I didn't even think about that. To be in something that is such a cultural phenomenon, and then, but you're in it, so you can't enjoy it like we have.
Not like everyone has, no. But that's then I guess that's the same thing with anything. Well, I listen to your podcast and you won't listen to it the way I listen to it.
No, we have listening parties. We listen to the whole thing. No, we don't.
I was like, my God.
Absolutely. We get together every week, sit around like an old-fashioned radio.
Oh, that was
radio.
A very funny bit that you did. No.
I used to listen to every episode before it went out to make sure I was happy with the edit. But after a while, Tom got so good at editing and knowing what I would say. Yeah. And I've got to the point, and I just... Sometimes I really hate hearing my own voice. I sort of think, I listen, I think, shut up. Shut the fuck up. You've interrupted someone. And it's out of excitement and out of ADHD and stuff. Yeah. But I hear myself interrupt and I just cringe and I hate myself. And I think, why are you talking over her?
No, you know what annoys me is that when I was little, I went on a press tour and I have four incredible boys that I work with, and we would do press tours together and sit there and on talk shows, and I would get really excited because I have so much to say, and then I would be like, oh God, and I would talk over them and they would also talk over me, but it was kind of like we were 12, and I got absolutely so heavily bullied by the media for doing it, and I never spoke again in interviews because I just didn't want to even acknowledge the fact that I was even in the interview. So I would just sit there in the headlights because I felt like I couldn't speak. And I think, you know what, talk over people because you've got something to say and we're all excited to be here. Yeah. And I don't think that because I'm a girl or because you're a boy, you don't have anything to say. We can all talk at the same time and it's fun like that, you know? So I think it's really, I think we should talk over each other.
That's so bizarre that someone would watch like a 12-year-old and be like, talking too much. Shut it up.
I love that.
It's like, have you met 12-year-olds? Yeah. Like, what do they expect? That's so utterly bizarre. That makes me so sad that you're not able to just be excited. You've done a thing at 12. Again, picking scabs. You were there on like Letterman with your friends.
That.
And you're there. You're excited. It's like, just let the girl
let
be a
kid. Let a 12-year-old be 12-year-old.
Jesus,
yeah.
People are scumbags. That Uzi, 2 years, villain. I swear to God. Fuck. Sorry.
Have you got a question?
Yes, I do. This is a question from Astrid. Astrid, make yourself known. Hey, hello, Astrid. Love that name. It's a favourite name of mine. Like, genuinely.
To the mother.
Oh, your mother. Great choice.
That's what my mum would do. She'd be like, it's all because of me. You came out of me. It's like, so it's all about giving birth.
All about it. I remember I once asked my mum, what was giving birth to me like? And she went, shut up!
Triggering question.
Yeah, she just told me to shut up. I was like, fuck. So I know nothing about my birth. I know nothing about my birth. I'm like a mystery.
Can I say my birth?
Go on.
My this is true. My birth mother, because I'm adopted, I only found her about 10 years ago, and she told me that I asked about my birth, and she said, I gave birth for 3 days behind a sheet because I wasn't allowed to see who I was giving birth to. Because she was an unmarried mother's home, and it was a deep shame. And so I came out behind a sheet, and I never got to pop through the curtain and say hi to her. And I wonder why I'm in show business.
That is a top Trump show business story. Yeah, so when I was like, you know, my mum just didn't hug me enough, and then you're like, I was born behind a curtain. You're like, fuck.
I hope it was a red velvet one. Hello, world.
Astrid's mother, welcome. This is your question for Millie. What's the most important thing you've learned working with UNICEF?
Oh, I mean, it's an ongoing thing because it's like they're so incredible and it's always been a really big dream of mine.
Can you explain briefly what UNICEF is? Because some of our global listeners may not know.
Yes, so UNICEF is an organisation that helps people all around the world in conflicted areas, people like refugees or young children seeking education or shelter. And UNICEF is an incredible organisation that helps young people and people in general to find help. And it's a really broad term, but they really do everything. They're like Harrods.
Harrods.
Harrods. You know Harrods do everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're
like, what about Tiger?
They are. They are amazing. And they just...
The Harrods of the...
Harrods, they used to do everything. They don't do anything anymore. They used to have a pet shop.
What...
Harrods. They used to sell
Harrods,
elephants.
Not UNICEF.
Oh, sorry, no.
UNICEF.
Not UNICEF. Anyway, it's back to UNICEF. sorry. UNICEF is amazing. And I used to watch the adverts, you know, donate. And I used to be like, we've got to donate everything. And I said, like, as soon as I work, I'm going to donate everything I have because they deserve it, because they're helping the people of the world. And so anyways, I kind of got into the industry, realized, oh God, I have kind of a platform. I'm going to just do things for them and just hope that they even just look in my direction. And so I went to events and hosted some galas and really had a lot of fun. And I was 12 and I just met children, refugees who have been through so much and told their stories. And I was just so unbelievably grateful and didn't really even deserve to be on the same stage. I just kind of watched in the UN and was just like, just in awe of not only the people that work there, but the people that are helped by UNICEF. And so then they were like, yo, do you want to be an ambassador? And I was like, oh no, like I'm going to die. Like I'm going to die if you ever honor me, something like that. And I got honored to be an ambassador and I fully cried for the whole day. And wore blue nails in representation of World Children's Day. And so my work with them is really focused on children, yeah, and bringing girls' education to the forefront of everyone's mind, creating schools that are closer to people's communities so the girls don't have to walk so far. Lots of girls don't do that because of the fear of them being harassed or abused. And so everywhere, I mean, we are lucky we are in a place where, you know, we still deal with those issues, but places all around the world deal with those issues on a different level. Mm-hmm. And so UNICEF really gave me that voice to help young girls out there in receiving an education, a secondary education, so that they can get higher income and they can, you know, have children at the time that they want to have children and marry the people that they want to marry. So,
yeah. Amazing.
I'm delighted you're doing that, Millie. And when you say you have kind of a platform, you have 45 million Instagram followers.
Just a small gathering of friends.
Yeah, but as soon as you say that, like, it freaks me out, you know?
Yeah,
it's quite
that
scary.
But it's great that you're using it in various ways. You know, I referenced Judy Garland before. You know, there was a whole generation of brilliantly talented girls, young women, teens, and then, you know, young women in their 20s who were really used by the system. And I kind of love it that you're going, okay, I'm going to have this skincare range because I see that a lot of things that, you know, young women are putting their faces, but also then you kind of own the game. You're not coming back to them going, please, can I have a paycheck? Please, can I have a paycheck? Mm-hmm. Well, they make money off the 45 million people who would go and see a Judy Garland film. Mm-hmm. She'd get one fee. Like, you're going, not that I'm comparing you to Judy Garland. It seems like I'm obsessed with Judy Garland.
No, but I am too.
You know what I mean, though? Like, yes. I'm just using her as an example, yes, of a young woman who was, like, chewed up and spent. You're going, well, hold on. If 45 million people like me, then I can influence them to look over here at what UNICEF are doing. Mm. Yeah. Or I can go...
Point them in the right direction, for sure. Because I think social media is the worst place of all time.
Yes.
I know you specifically, Susie. I mean, I see the work that you do, and it's a horrible place. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, well, when people come onto my page, they can be happy and they can see people actually being helped, or they can learn, or they can laugh, and they're seeing a real girl. And of course I like to post my little like selfies and be like, ew. But like, you know, then I get real and I just use it as a place of fun. And then I was like, do you know what? I'm not posting anything personal anymore. Like, you don't get to see that part of me. You get to see the things that I choose to put out in the world. And if that's me telling you to go and help, you know, Malala Yousafzai promote her book, or, you know, you do that because that's what I'm putting out there in the world and that's what I choose. And I hope that if there's a 12-year-old that's told Instagram that they're 18 and they've created an account, they're going onto my account and they're not being exploited to the horrible world that's out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is. I was so torn with social media because when I first discovered it, I cannot tell you how different it was. I mean, I've left Twitter now for various reasons.
Me too.
It's just gross.
It's useless.
And but the thing that's so brilliant about it that I loved was that it gave visibility and voices to people who wouldn't normally have that. And people, like, in a very kind of small way, you know, people could promote their businesses in a way that they didn't need to, you know, hire this person or go through this way. They could generate that income themselves, or they can, like, things like Afro hair care. Like, as a child, all I was told was that your hair is awful and it's gross and it's disgusting. And now there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos of black women and black femmes and black non-binary people looking after and being proud of their hair, shaving it all off, doing all this amazing stuff that I do sit there and I go, God, if I was 12 and I saw this, this would have changed my whole relationship to beauty, how I see myself. And those things are powerful. It may seem very thin. It's absolutely powerful. That's what I love about it. But my God, it can be absolutely disgusting. And I understand the pullback of not wanting to put personal stuff on there, because you think, actually, do people need to see that? Do I need to put that out there?
Do they deserve it?
Do they deserve it? I think, and that's for anyone. That, you know, you don't need to be a, you know, movie star to even have that question. It's just about going, I think we need to really look at the way that it's being monetized and everything like that. We need to really question how much we put of ourselves there, because God, we're precious. And I don't know whether the people, the powers that be, them that are in charge of that stuff necessarily understand that. It's, you know, it's just money, isn't it? So anyway, that was my speech.
I loved it.
Yeah, I feel you're absolutely right. Hello, Guilty Feminists. I'll be doing my stand-up show about coming out as bisexual and going in through some psychedelics. That will never be on the podcast, those stories, because the podcast is on the internet. And that is where the stories cannot be. So if you'd like to see that show and you live in London, you can come to the Soho Theatre, but I would book tickets now because the first run sold out entirely. That stand-up show is from the 26th of April to the 7th of May at Soho Theatre. Get your tickets now. I hope to tour it at a later date if you're not in London. But do you know where we are touring? Well, with the Guilty Feminist live show, which is lots of comedians, lots of fun, lots of local feminists, music. We are having a phenomenal time. We'll be in Liverpool on the 22nd of April. We'll be in Sheffield on the 23rd of April. And we will be with Jessica Foster Q, Sophie Juker, Celia Ray B, and Jess Robinson. You will come to this show to refuel and you will leave fully renewed. Get your tickets now. If you don't live in either of those places, don't worry. We're coming somewhere near you. Go to guiltyfeminist.com to find out where and when. If you want to get some more confidence and power, why not try our Big Speeches workshop with Jessica Regan? And if you like this podcast, but you'd like it ad-free, join our Patreon and you'll get some other goodies too. For details on all of these things, you know where to go, guiltyfeminist.com. And now, back to the podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Would you like to see some stand-up comedy?
Yeah!
Then please, welcome to the mic, the incredible Susan McCormack!
Hi, is this thing on? It is. Hi, guys. I always do this. I'm not going to do stand-up. I'm just going to talk to you. Because I'm not a stand-up comedian. I am here, but I'm not. And I have to be really careful, actually, because
I've been going out back into the world and seeing people, and I'm very anxious, but I'm doing it. Hello. And I bumped into a couple of comedians, and they're not best pleased. They're not best pleased about me. And I've had a couple of icy receptions from comedians, and I asked my friend, Eleanor, I was like, dude, like, I run up to these people, I'm like, hi, and they're like, hi. And I'm like, oh, shady. And they're like, babes, you haven't done the circuit. You haven't done the circuit, you haven't been to Bolton, you haven't been to Leicester, you haven't been to Portsmouth. And I was like, tis true. So I've got to be careful about calling myself a comedian. So I'm just going to talk to you guys. So, yes, guys, you know that Millie, our guest, turned 18. She turned 18, which means that she's a woman, which means that she's an adult, because that's what happens at midnight, because we're mad. Who remembers their 18th birthday? Just by sound of whoops, who remembers their 18th birthday? Whoop. Curious, who isn't 18 yet? Whoop. Get out! I'm joking. Welcome. No, welcome. So my 18th birthday took place on my birthday, obviously. Good start. My birthday is on New Year's Eve. Are there any New Year's Eve babies here? Whoop if there are. A special! Oh my God! I literally, as a child, I built my whole personality having a birthday on New Year's Eve. No joke. I would do that game, it's like a drama game, which they would say, like, say two lies and one truth. And I'd be like, my birthday is on New Year's Eve. Guess. And they'd be like, probably is. I'm like, shit. Okay. I just thought I was like Jesus or like Britney Spears. I thought I was magical. And then I think I realised that Elizabeth Arden is born on New Year's Eve. I was like, classy. And then Anthony Hopkins. I was like, I don't know who that old man is. But my 18th birthday party was at the now defunct, I don't know, God, who knows? Who's a lot? No, don't need to whoop. I had my birthday party at a club called the Buzz Bar. This was just off... I heard a... Who knows Buzz Bar? Ah, hello! Hiya! So Buzz Bar was this rank club just off Leicester Square back in the day when you did go out in Leicester Square, which you, trust me, you don't do now. If I see you clubbing in Leicester Square, I'm going to judge you. We don't do that. We go to Dalston, we go to Shoreditch. That's what we do now. No, please go out in Leicester Square. It was amazing. So it was this club called Buzz Bar. And that's where I had my 18th. And I remember my dress. I picked out this fugly dress. It was red, highly flammable. And I looked like it was like a saloon bar, wench from like, you know, the film Wild Wild West. And then I was wearing these like cardboard red shoes with a bow. And I had my weave in. My first weave, because I wasn't allowed to weave until I was 18, and then I was just flinging it in people's faces, thinking I was Beyonce. And to be honest, I have seen pictures of that night. I do look really pretty. sweating in that get-up. And I just remember having the best time of my life. And I feel like it got me thinking about that moment where you become a woman, because if you saw me that night, I didn't look like a woman. I looked like a fancy-dressed baby. But in my head, I was like, womanhood, I'm a woman. I got responsibilities in cardboard shoes. I cannot stress to you how cardboard they were. So I was desperate to go out because I'm from a Nigerian family and they were very, very strict about New Year's Eve. Until the age of 18, I spent every New Year's Eve in the church. Oh, yeah. It was like a shit rave. So there would be loads of us there. And all these parents, they've just dragged their fucking kids. And they're like, we are going to pray until the sun comes up. And it'd just be all us kids. We'd start playing. We'd like fall asleep at 9. We're on the floor just crying whilst all the parents are like, ah, Jesus, Jesus, save us. And us kids were like, I'm so sleepy. And then we'd go out at like 6 in the morning. My mum's there like, yeah, I'm ready for the year. And I'm like, I'm sleepy. So I knew, it was really weird because I knew that I was gearing up. I was gearing up to that moment where I was going to be like, Mum, I'm 18, I'm ready to party. You can't really say that to your mum. Like, I'm ready to party, bitch. So I gently said, Mum, I'm going to turn 18 and, like, I really want to go out. And it's going to be the first New Year's Eve that a lot of my friends are going out. And, like, do I have your permission, please? I've got this really lovely, flammable red dress that I just want to look gorgeous in. Please, Mum. And she was like, yeah, you're okay. I was like, fuck, okay. All right, okay, here we go. So I bought the dress and woke up in the morning. I was like, I'm a woman, bollocks. But that's what I felt. And she called me downstairs. She was like, Suzanne, come downstairs. So I came downstairs. She was like, happy birthday, my dear. I was like, hi, thanks, Mum. I feel like a woman. She's like, okay. My dear, I had a dream. I'm just going to put a nice pin in that. When a Nigerian mother says, I had a dream, it will not be good. In fact, when a Nigerian mother says, I had a dream, she means I had a nightmare. I'll walk you through it. So she went, I just saw you in my dream. And you are walking down the street. And you are wearing a dress. What color was it? I think it was red. I was like, yeah? Yes, you're walking down the street. It was your birthday. So today, I was like, got it? Yeah. And this man just came up behind you and beheaded you. Anyway, happy birthday. So best believe I was walking around Leicester Square like, who's that? Who's that? And it's like, yo, Suze, it's just me. I'm like, don't touch my neck. I was scared. It worked. I didn't let any man touch me. I was like, do you have a samurai sword on you? Like, no, they checked us at the door. They didn't check us at the door. That's why we all went to Buzz Bar. So then I was thinking about the moments in my life where I feel like I actually did become a woman. I didn't become a woman that moment. So I'm going to just run you down the top 10 moments where I felt I became a woman in my life. So number one, first time I bought my own cutlery. This was... I was 23. I was living with my first really serious boyfriend. We were together, I think, 3 years by that point. We were living in a fucking lovely house in Blackheath. That when I go past, I go, shit, it was so nice. And it was like, I think it was £800 each. No, not each, together. So £400 each to rent. That doesn't exist in London anymore. It was gorgeous. It had a garden. So, we moved in and I thought that we'd made it. And so I skipped off down to Lewisham Shopping Centre, Poundland, and I bought a selection of knives and forks and spoons. Number two, next moment where I felt like I was a woman, I was living in Highgate as a student. Now, if you don't know what... If you don't know what Highgate is, let me just tell you what it is. It's a very high point of London, hence Highgate. So much so, when you come out of the tube station, the air feels different. I remember the first time I went to Highgate, I was like, shit, is that oxygen? Shit, the bed, what? And I lived there, I went to RADA. And so I lived there in Highgate, living my best life for 3 years, enjoying it. I was bougie, I was going to bakeries, I was getting papers and orange juice in the Saturday morning. Like, cool. Like, anytime I went out to the club and I would tell the driver, yo, I need to go back home. They're like, where? I wasn't saying south of the river. And they'd be like, get out. That's the thing. If you live south of the river and you're trying to get a taxi, they will not take you there. I'm a Southeast Londoner, I'm from Peckham, so I'm used to that. So when I'd be like, thanks, guys, but I enjoyed the high life for 3 years. So I went to Highgate, I'd be like, Highgate, please. I'd be like, oh, well, yes, ma'am. So I really enjoyed it. So that was another moment until I had to leave Highgate because then I had to pay council tax and it was twice the amount of rent. Number three, tampons. We're going there. So when I had my period, I started using pads because my mum was like, that's what you do. Because if you use a tampon, you lose your virginity. I was like, how did you make me? I remember being in double science when I was in year 9 and I had a pad and I was like, I'm sick of this shit. I was so uncomfortable. I was on the stool. I was pissed off. I was like, this is shit. I don't understand what any of, like, what Mrs. Fage is saying. And then Victoria came up to me. She was actually the sweetest girl. She was like, psst, are you okay? And I was like, oh, I like this thing. It's like saggy. And double science is long, so I need to change it. But, like, no one's going to let me because I'm in a girl's school, so no one doesn't give a fuck. No, don't care. She was like, psst, have you heard of tampons? I was like, yeah, I've heard of tampons, but I want to stay a virgin. Not a slag. She handed me one. And then I remember walking out the cubicle as after I inserted it. I was like, I am a woman. I'm a woman. I can do sports and things. And nothing is drooping in between my legs. So that was a real moment. Number 4, next moment where I felt like I was an adult, 3-day hangovers. Number 5, needing to stretch before doing a slut drop. Number 6, needing to stretch after doing a slut drop. The struggle's real. I've got to prepare. If someone's like, do you want to go to the club? I'm like, I need 3 days prep. Number 7, my first proper job. When I had my first proper job in Madame Tussauds. Yes, I was 18. And I was like, right, I'm here to make magic happen. It was weird. It was a weird fucking place. I remember this girl came in and we had Lady Gaga when she had the telephone thing on her head. Like, she had like the telephone. I think it was from Jonathan Ross, and she had a hat that was a telephone. And this girl was like, ah! Lady Gaga! I was like, the fuck? I'd taken so much Pro Plus and like Red Bull, and I was hungover because that was a constant state. And I was like, shit, like turn it down a notch. Like, she's not there. It was very weird. But I felt really grown up. I had a paycheck and everything. And then my next thing was my first workplace romance. That's number 7. I felt like a grown up. Also at Madame Tussauds with a Hugh Grant lookalike. Four weddings and a funeral, Hugh Grant. We're talking of the floppy hair. He was cute. Like, it was weird though. it was weird. Number 9. Next time I felt like a grown up, the day no one asks you for ID. That day hasn't happened for me. Black don't crack. Number 10, the day you realise that black does crack if you don't use SPF. But my God, what is wrong with cracking? What is wrong with cracking? To grow old, most of you don't know this yet, but to grow old, right, is a fucking privilege. Like, we should be happy and we should be honoured and we shouldn't be scared. We should be using SPF to protect our skin from the sun, yes. But also, like, yeah, sure, you have a few wrinkles. So I think of myself at 18 in Buzz Bar in the disgusting, hideous fucking can-can red dress and the cardboard shoes and the sweat-out weave, twirling to Lean Back by Fat Joe. Do you remember that? Lean Back, that's literally what I was doing. Surrounded by her girlfriends, and I just want to say to her, babes, enjoy it all. Enjoy it all and just know that you're meant to be grown up now, but you're never really going to grow up. Not ever. You're going to be doing jokes in front of people in lovely rooms, and that is how it should be. Thank you so much for listening to me. And lovely people of King's Place, London, please welcome to the stage for some stand-up comedy, Deborah Francis-White!
I think you'll agree with me. Susan McComa is a stand-up comedian. She doesn't need to go to Bolton to prove it. It's true. Anyone who says you're not a stand-up comedian, they're just wrong. So it's International Women's Day season. It's more of a season now than a day, I think you'll agree. I'm getting to the end of it now, and I find it exhausting. I don't know how men deal with having the rest of the year to themselves. I am so tired, because I'm like Feminist Father Christmas. I've got to be so many places. Right now, I'm both here and in Glasgow and in Belgium. I'm on a Zoom as well. It's the whole thing. And I don't know how it's happened, I'll be absolutely honest with you, because now I seem to be a professional woman. I don't mean I'm a professional woman. I mean a woman for a living. They ring me up. The BBC constantly ring me up, like radio stations and stuff. And they ring me up and they go, Kim Kardashian said something. And I'm like, has she? They go, would you like to comment on it? I'm like, why? I don't know her. We've got nothing in common. She lives in a different country. But well, she said a thing about being a woman. Or she is a woman. You're also a woman. Would you like to professionally comment? What, on the radio? Yeah, what? But what? But why? Because you're a woman. Well, are you also ringing up Joe Lycett every time Bojo says something stupid? Because if not, please go away. How has this happened to me that I have become a person who is consulted on other women? I get it all the time. It's part of IWD season as well, International Women's Day season. It's sort of just, it's partly Britain. Did you know that in Italy, they celebrate International Women's Day by giving women flowers? Yeah. And in France, they give sweets. In Ukraine, they traditionally have a bank holiday for everyone. And in Britain, we celebrate International Women's Day by having a series of meetings in which women explain to each other how difficult it is to be a woman. That's how we celebrate here. That's how we celebrate. So I've been getting a lot of those phone calls. I find them sometimes frustrating. Sometimes I like to go on and talk about it, but sometimes I feel like they ring me up with a slight edge. There's an edge. A couple of Christmases ago, this is my favourite one, someone rang up and said, just wanted to know if you wanted to come on the radio because we'd like you to discuss something that's happening in the news. I was like, oh, okay, something feminist, yeah. They've banned Baby It's Cold Outside. They've banned it. They've banned it. And we think as a feminist, you'll probably approve of them banning the song Baby It's Cold Outside. They've banned Baby It's Cold Outside, and we think that you will approve of that, and we'd like you to come on the radio and say that. And I said, they've banned Baby It's Cold Outside. I don't approve of that. I said, they've banned it. I don't think they should ban it. I said, does that mean I can't sing it in the privacy of my own home? And they went, oh, no, no. And I said, but I couldn't sing it in a karaoke bar. They said, oh, no, you could. And I said, but Adele and Harry Styles couldn't drop it as a Christmas single. And they went, oh, no, they could. I said, well, then how has it been banned? And the guy went, well, some radio stations are playing Jingle Bell Rock instead. How is that banning it? I said, how is that banning it? That's not banning it. I said, why do you think that some radio stations have decided to play something else instead? And he went, well, it's because of it's Me Too movement, isn't it? And I said, oh, so Me Too's having a moment. So some people have decided maybe it's not the year to sing a song that includes the line, maybe I've rehypnoled your drink. Do you think that's it? He said, yeah, but where's it going to end then? Are they going to ban Jingle Bell Rock? I said, I don't know. I haven't analysed the lyrics clearly. I don't really know what, I mean, what does it say? Is it Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell, Jingle Bell Rock? I've got a webcam in your bedroom. Because if so, that's going to come out. And they're going to ban it. They're going to ban it. Come, they told him, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, not all men, not all men. Or perhaps all Christmas songs have a men's rights activist agenda to them, and we, as feminists, are going to seek them out, and we're going to ban them. We're going to ban them all. We're going to ban them. I said, I don't want to be banning things. They are going to stop asking me to be Mary Whitehouse. That's what they want. They want me to be Mary. Some young people won't know who Mary Whitehouse is. She was a lady in the 80s. She was a housewife. And even as I said, I'm a feminist, but I'm describing a woman as a housewife, but I actually do think that's how she identified. Her pronouns were house and wife. So she was. She'd say, I'm a rat house, I'm banned. She'd always be saying banned things. You know, ban this filth. Down with this sort of thing. Ban this filth. And I don't want to ban things. I don't want to ban things at all. I'm a comedian. I'm happy-go-lucky. I want people to have sex in the street. I don't want to. But stop asking me to come on a radio and say I want to ban things. I don't want to ban things. And I said, in fact, here's the thing. I'm on the way to do a show, a Christmas show. When I got this call, I was literally on the way to do a Christmas show that we were doing with the Guilty Feminist in Hammersmith. And the guests that we had on that night were from Shelter. And they were there specifically to talk about the fact that they'd made a deal with boarding schools that people who were homeless, because it was so cold over that Christmas, could come in for the duration of from Christmas Eve to New Year's Day, and they could have a warm bed and they'd get warm meals for the whole duration of that time. For which, I mean, obviously that's a brilliant scheme, and at the same time, why aren't the government doing it? That's not okay. But also, you know what I thought mostly? Can you imagine being in that situation and being taken to Eton? And looking around and thinking, if they'd sent me here a few years before, I wouldn't be in this situation. Do you know what I mean? I was like, it's galling to be sleeping in David Cameron's old bed, sleeping, just eating where Boris Johnson had all of his meals. And then it's like New Year's Day, it's not that cold, now leave. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine? So I said to this person who'd rang me, I said to the guy, I said, look, here's the thing. I will not come on the radio and have this fake fight about a 50-year-old song because I don't really care if people play Baby It's Cold Outside or not. I don't think it's going to change much. Obviously, I would like those kinds of things not to be, like, you know, in our face constantly, you know, reinforcing a culture. But I don't think it's going to be the difference really between anything. If people really want to play Baby It's Cold Outside, I don't care. I don't want to go and have a fake fight so you can wind up all the feminists to go, whoa, you're not banning it enough. And then wind up all the other people going, you shouldn't be banning things, because nobody at the BBC really cares about this song. You care about winding people up so there's lots of people angry and doing clicks and writing on Twitter and causing up a shitstorm. And I said, actually, at some point in the future, when climate change has come to get us, and when we are in a situation where there is such a polarization in this country, and we are in a situation where inequality is so extremely bad that we are going to have more people, we're going to have to open more boarding schools to have all the people who are homeless just whipped in there over Christmas. I said, you know, look, why don't you get me on the radio so that I could talk to someone who can do something about these problems? And in fact, why is it me? It should be someone with lived experience of homelessness talking to a minister who can actually do something about it. And you are going to look back on this day and you're going to look at your part in this in 10 years' time, and you are going to regret that you spent time ringing people up to talk about a 50-year-old Christmas song. I'll come on the radio, but I'll only come on the radio to say, baby, it's cold outside. And there are people living on the street, and we've got to do something about it. And the guy said, I'm only a researcher, but I'll talk to my boss. And I said, yeah, like, actually do. Because if all the researchers said, I don't want to do this, and all those bosses said to their bosses, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, this doesn't feel right, you know, it would change something. And I actually don't want to ban things. I'm Generation X, as I said before, which means I, as we've established, could be Winona Ryder, but didn't have the forethought to do that, nor did I have the forethought to give birth to Millie Bobby Brown. I've had the forethought to do nothing. But I'll tell you what I am at Generation X. There's a lot of young people in this country who'll go, like ban things. And there's a lot of old people in this country who go, what they want to do is banning things. They're very upset that people ban things. They're like, can we ban the concept of banning things? And there's lots of banning. And I feel sometimes I'm in the middle of that. And I'm going, I don't think we need to ban things as much as we need to talk to each other. I really do think we need to talk to each other. And the example I'll give of this is I was recently at a very fancy event in the film industry, and I was speaking to someone extremely senior, a man called Brian. I'll call him Brian because that's not his name, and I can't say his real name to you. But I was at this event with this man called Brian, very, very senior in the film industry, and he'd been in the industry for years, and he has a proper position in it. And next to me and Brian was a woman called Judith, and she was also senior. They were both white people in their 50s, Judith had a job in quite a conservative sector. And we were all chatting, and you know, he asked me what I did, and I said I did a podcast called The Guilty Feminist, and he went, what's the use of feminism in 2022? And I thought he meant that in a helpful way. Like, you know, what's on your agenda? So I said, oh, you know, sometimes your guess is as good as mine, Brian. I said, you know, sometimes I wonder, what are we doing? Are we just trying to get more women like Priti Patel into the cabinet? Like, it's confusing topic, you know. I do see that. But I said, I'm very pleased to say that feminism's done something extraordinary this week. Some women took the Met Police to court. It was a collective called Reclaim These Streets. And they fought and won because they should have been able to have a vigil for Sarah Everard, who was brutally killed and brutally hurt before she was killed and assaulted by a police officer. And the court saw that that was right. And so that is an act of feminism where there'll be precedent in the law that they cannot stop us protesting in the same way. And I think that's worth doing. And Brian said, yeah, sometimes I find it confusing with women, though, because some women dress in a way so as to be sexually irresistible to men. Oh, God. And Judith, bless her, because I didn't know which way it was going to go, said, well, Brian, it's only confusing if you don't realise that women are people. Bless her. She said, yeah, I can see how it would be confusing if you didn't understand that a woman was not something for you to resist or not be able to resist, but a human person. And he went, yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying women dress in a certain way and it's like they're trying to lure men in. And you know, that's where it gets confusing. And I said, what's that got to do with hurting a woman? And he went, no, I'm just saying approaching. I said, I don't mind being approached as long as a man doesn't mind hearing me say no. I said, but it's nothing to do with what we were just talking about, which was the murder of a woman. And he went, yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying. And I said, you know, Brian, there are some places in this world where women dress in a way where they cover their whole body and their face, and those women are still hurt. And in this country, in Victorian times, during the, you know, Enola Holmes era, women wore things from their necks to their ankles, and women still got hurt. And if you don't think that women got hurt as much, please look at the stats. And I said, and Sarah Everard was wearing jeans and a jumper. So in what way is this confusing for you? And he went, oh, whoa, 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 the man who killed Sarah Everard was just one lone madman. I said, no, he wasn't. He was part of a system. You've seen the WhatsApps from the police. You've seen the photographs. You've seen other things. He wasn't. He was upheld by that system. He had a horrible nickname. He was upheld by that system. And he said, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just saying that sometimes it's confusing. And for example, he said, there's a woman here who I find annoying. He said, and you know, I will say, I would never do anything inappropriate. He said, I work with women. Some of them are attractive. Some of them aren't. I said, Brian, I'm going to stop you right there. Some of them aren't to you, but it's really not very appropriate for you as a senior man in the film industry to be lining the woman up, even in your mind, to be lining the women up and deciding which ones are attractive and which ones aren't. But he said, well, okay, well, there's one woman. I find her quite difficult. I was like, I wonder how she finds you, but you've never stopped to ask. But anyway, she recommended that a young actress, up-and-coming actress, be invited to an event. And he said, and it was an important event, and he said, and I looked at her social media, and there she was posing on a beach in a bikini in a very sexualized way. And I thought, well, she's not coming. And I went, okay, all right. So firstly, I think every woman in this room, and there was a lot of women in the room, a lot of people in this room, I said, I think every person in this room has been to the beach. And I think every woman in this room has worn a swimsuit on a beach. I don't think any of us have not been to a beach. So what's the problem here with this woman? And he went, oh, well, it's just that she was posing very sexually. I said, well, that's how you read it. And he said, but it's just not appropriate for a professional woman who's meant to be an actress. And I said, I just want you to look around this room, Brian. I want you to look around this room. Judith was loving it. I said, in this room, there's a lot of paraphernalia for James Bond because it's an anniversary year. Every room you go into in the film industry is a lot of paraphernalia for James Bond. And I said, do you know how women, young actresses, have been asked to aspire for decades by James Bond? By a picture of a woman coming out of the ocean in a bikini in a sexualized fashion. Do you know how they've been asked to aspire? They've been asked to aspire to wake up dead in James Bond's bed covered in a substance. That's how they've been asked to aspire. And what you're saying to me is you don't want women to unwrap themselves. You want them to come to you like a wrapped sweetie so you can unwrap them. And then you can sexualize them and you can commodify them. You don't want that woman on Instagram getting a cut of the bikini sales. You want to give her a paycheck and then when she's yesterday's news or when she gets a bit old, you're going to tell her to sod off. That's what you want, Brian. You want women who are demure, who are covered up, who are uncommercialized because you want to do all of those things to them. And that's what this industry wants to do to them. And that's why you won't accept anyone who's already posed in a bikini before you've told them to take their kit off. And he said, you should come here and join our committee. We've got committees. You should be on a committee. And that's why we should be having conversations. Thank you very much. Judith backed me to the hilt. She backed me to the hilt, and she mentioned trans women very early as well. And I was like, Judith, you are a mensch. And she was in her 50s. She was in a conservative shoot, but she was there, and the two of us. And I just saw her later in the loo, and we just high-fived. We're just like, yes, come on. But he said, he literally said to me, you should be on a committee. Isn't that an extraordinary
Please
story?
Please go.
I think I'm going to be on a committee.
Yeah. Sit just there. Change it.
She said, we have panels. And he said, you should be saying
was
these
Was he
things.
Old?
He wasn't that old.
Oh,
I'm so
he's still
sorry.
Got life to go.
Well,
yeah. Well, so you could have. You could
was
have.
Was he nearly
time.
Dead? Is what you're saying?
Yes.
No, he's nowhere near dead.
So then you need to go onto the committee. You need to change it.
He sounds old, doesn't he? He sounds like.
Yeah, he sounds like he's
from a different generation.
Yes, but that was what was so horrendous is that you think, oh, okay, this must be like someone who's beyond help, and actually, no. Like the things that he was saying is just. You know, the classic, we say it as jokes here. Oh, somebody said, oh, you know, women dress provocatively.
No, it's
and we go, lol, 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 lol. The fact that that was said as a reason, any kind of reasoning in 2022 was just like, again, why one of my I'm a feminist butts are like, this is taking ages. Like, that is long. That's long that you don't get it. That's very, very strange.
Yeah, but it was such... I realise I'm in such a bubble when I'm in that situation.
How long was the conversation?
Oh, I mean, as long as sort of what you saw there.
Like, oh,
but
long,
I mean, it was longer because
but
obviously
I'm
we went back and
forth.
I'm proud
of him for sitting there and listening. You know, I feel like I've also talked to people...
Oh, yeah.
...that just shut
but
off and walk out.
He just...
And I'm trying to lure it. I'm like, come on, you can get there with me.
Yeah,
and they don't.
He kept saying...
the same thing.
Yes, but he kept saying it's confusing, though, because of the way women dress. And he kept coming back to that. Mm. And every time, bless Judith, she'd go, it's not confusing if you think a woman is a person.
And he was like, ba, 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 but
she's confusing, though, right?
Later
like,
on, she
crowd.
Said to me, oh, you had all the arguments. And I was like, yours was the best argument.
Yeah.
Like, if you think women are people, this all goes away.
Yeah.
And you don't think women deserve anything. You don't want, you know, but that idea of, but she was already in a bikini. I hadn't put her in one. And I'm like, this is what it is, ultimately.
Did
this
you
is,
think of that in the spot?
Yeah.
You're just, like, really did. Smart.
No.
You know, like, because I, like, wouldn't, I would, like, have to go home, you know, and I'm in the shower and I'm like,
yeah.
I could just have sat. I was like, unwrap like a sweet. And, you know, I would have said all that. You know, I would have to give me a day or two. You were just like on it, like a car bonnet.
I think I was just so furious.
Yeah. Mm.
And it just rose up in me and just kind of came out. Like you know, in Stranger Things with the demon. Like it's
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
It was like my feminist, the thing, you know. Like
yeah. Yeah. That's everything.
What's it called in? Is it
the Demogorgon?
The Demogorgon. Yes. That's right. The Demogorgon. It was like the feminist the Femidorgon.
Yes. That's perfect.
That's perfect. Okay, that's what we're going to call it now. When you
the
feel Femidorgon. It rising within you, and you're thinking, "Oh, don't make
this
a fuss. Don't be difficult. Don't make a fuss.
It's
allow your Femidorgon to come out."
Yeah.
Oh.
That's everything. I'm going to pitch that.
Yo. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you say pitch or pinch?
I'm going to pitch it. Like.
Oh yeah.
To the directors.
Okay. Great.
To put it in. We should get you in the show. as a Femigorgon.
I'm into being a Femigorgon.
And we're going to get Judith.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Brian. Ugh. And we're gonna unwrap Brian.
Only okay. if Brian's in a bikini.
Yeah, only yes. if that's what I'm saying. I'm gonna have him.
Unwrap
I'm gonna
Brian.
We're gonna unwrap Brian.
Like a sweetie.
Just like a sweetie.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get it on film. It's going to be great.
Amazing. Amazing.
I love it.
Okay. All right. I am down for that. We'll keep talking.
Yeah.
We've got to get Grace Petrie on.
Yes.
But before we do, I'm just going to do a couple of quick fires. When did you realize you were a feminist?
Oh, on a red carpet. Somebody asked me and I thought it was a bad word. I didn't know what it meant.
You thought feminism was a bad word. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, this is a good one. This is a good quick fire. Out of all the characters that you play, which is the best outfit you've ever worn?
Enola, I'd say.
Oh, yeah.
That corset is snatched waist.
That sounds right. Okay, another one. If you could be anyone else for a day, this is from Amber. If you could be anyone else for a day, who would you be and why?
I don't know. I probably
for the people
me.
Listening, no, Millie probably. Just pointed at Deborah behind her.
Yes, I would totally. And then hopefully I could take some homework home and like be that when I'm still me. Or Beyonce, probably.
Fair. Yeah, I'd go with Beyonce if I were you. I'm often still numpting around in bed at 11. And then finally, what one attribute of Enola and 11 do you see in yourself?
Enola, maybe her humour, her quick wit. I like that.
Yes. Summarise Enola Holmes 2 in 3 words.
Oh, gosh. Adventure, romance, Susan McCormack.
Yay! It has been absolutely incredible, and we will say goodbye to you again, but before stay here, because to close the show in Guilty Feminist fashion, we've got a special guest on. Now, I know you're a fan of The Guilty Feminist, and she is... I think probably our most enduring and loved, celebrated musical act. Please welcome to the stage, as a present for your 18th birthday, the incredible Grace Petrie! Don't worry, we're not going to unwrap you like a sweetie. That's so when I said present, she came on and said, am I her present? And I was like, well, that sounds like we're going to unwrap you. And we've just been talking about that.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of pressure, you know. Well, listen, it is lovely to be here. And it's so lovely to meet you, Millie. And the Femmegorgon is quite an incredible idea to me. And because I was talking to Deb about this, because I'm a massive Stranger Things fan. We're all massive Stranger Things fans, right? Of course we fucking are. And so I'm a feminist, but, you know, so in the second season, right, you know the monster in the second season, right, is sort of this, like, big, slimy, red, like, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's sort of like more... And so those of you who have periods... Some of you have already got there with me. But, so I said to Deb the other day, can I tell Millie Bobby Brown that... I'm a feminist, but since I made the link that monster is just like, in my head, it's just a huge sentient period clot. And I just can't see it the same way. And in my mind, Susie knows what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, you know what I mean? And there is actually a scene, like, sorry to bring it up if it's triggering, but there's a scene where it, like, fucking beats 11 up. Do you know what I mean? And, like, you know that first...
I'm so triggered.
Right? And, like, that first fucking day of period pain where I was just, like, watching this period clock fucking beat you up and I was like, same. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah!
Same. So in my mind, it's Femmegorgon. You know, Femmegorgon is what it's always going to be. But I'm going to sing some songs. Is that okay? I'm going to sing... there's been such a wonderful conversation. I was watching the whole thing backstage and so much wonderful stuff tonight. But in particular, I always try and sort of tailor what I sing so it's sort of vaguely relevant to the show. But in particular, Susie, incredible set about becoming an adult. And there's been so much talk tonight about things that we wish that we could have told our younger selves. So I'm going to sing a song that I wrote... as a letter sort of to my teenage self, and this venue is the first place that I ever sang it, actually. It's called Black Tie. And it's about basically being, so I'm a butch lesbian, right? I'm a butch lesbian. Thanks. Wow. Thank you very much. Me and those five people. to the barricades. And I'm 34 years old, and I'm now incredibly proud of who I am. But I wasn't for years and years and years, right? I was very ashamed of it for a long time, particularly when I was a teenager. You know, like a lot of us, I think the world made me feel like what I am and what is so innate to me was just sort of less than and not enough, right? And I really took that on board. It took root in my foundations when I was a young person. I carried it around for years and years and years until something happened to me which changed my whole life, which is that I turned 30 and I instantly stopped giving a fuck about anything. So thank you. So I wrote this song as a bit of a letter to my teenage self and to anybody in here tonight who maybe needs a little bit of reassurance, right? I think all of us have got a lonely teenager in us somewhere, right, who maybe needs to hear this message that you're absolutely grand, right? So it's got a line that I'd love you to join in with, if that's okay. It's like a call and response line where I'm going to do the first bit and you're going to reply the second bit. if that's okay. And it's a bit sweary. I'm sorry about that. I can't censor it for two reasons. Number one, it's a rhyming couplet. So my hands are tied. And number two, it's literally the greatest achievement of my life, this lyric, so I cannot hide it under a bushel. So the line is, the images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. Are you with me, Guilty Feminist, right? Cool. So I'm going to sing the first bit, and the images that fucked you, and you're going to reply, were a patriarchal structure, a bit like this. And the images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. Just like that. And if you sing it loud enough, then patriarchy itself will fall. Are you with me? It's called Black Tie. Well, it's a jungle out there. The year 2018, I didn't think we'd still be sorting babies into blue and pink. And all our progress, yeah, I wonder what it means when the only girls' clothes that work for me turn out to be boyfriend jeans. Well, that's fine, 'cause I decline a narrow set of rules that just don't work. And these red lines, my year 11 self in her year 11 hell, saying everything's gonna be alright. No, you won't grow out of it. You will find the clothes that fit. And the images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. And you never will surrender to a narrow view of gender. And I swear there'll come a day when you won't worry what they say on the labels and on the tools. You will figure out what's yours. And it's a bloody nightmare trying to fight the spread of bigotry and fear that's uniting Piers Morgan and Jermaine Greer. And all our progress, yeah, I wonder who it's for when I dare to that trans lives matter. And all I got was a turf war. Well, that's fine, 'cause I decline your narrow set of rules, they just don't work. And these red lines, they're not mine. If you need me, you can find me ironing my shirt, 'cause I'm in black tie tonight. Get a postcard to my year 11 self in her year 11 hell, saying everything's gonna be alright. No, you won't grow out of it. You will find the clothes that fit. And the images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. And you never will surrender to a narrow view of gender. And I swear there'll come a day when you won't worry what they say on the labels and on the doors. You will figure out what's yours. You will figure out what's yours. And that it's yours. Nothing to do with fitting neatly in a box that was constructed to make it seem like people come in just two teams, and anything that's in between ain't good enough. And you will love, and you'll be loved, and you're in black tie tonight. Get a postcard to my year 11 self in her year 11 hell. Darling, everything's gonna be alright. No, you won't grow out of it. You will find the clothes that fit. And the images that fucked you were a patriarchal structure. And you never will surrender to that narrow view of gender. And there's folks you've yet to meet, but you're
exactly up their street, and they've been waiting just as long to hear someone sing this song. Better days are on their way, when it won't matter what they say. On the labels and on the doors, you will figure out what's yours. And girl, you're gonna be so happy. Girl, you're gonna be just fine. Girl, you're gonna be so happy. Down the line, down the line.
Quickly, we just have to do our closing titles, but before we do that, can I just say it's been a real privilege to talk to you. I feel like you're so full of life and ideas and full momentum, and I can really see why you're having the career you're having, because you just, I would buy things from you. Like, you know, if you came in and pitched to me like a movie, I'd be like, yes, 100%, I'll raise the money. And I have no money. I would have to find it afterwards, because I'd promised. So I just want to say, I really appreciate you coming on. I just think you're an extraordinary young woman, and I'm just so excited to see what you do next. And I will be your Femmegorgon anytime.
Absolute pleasure. I'm just really quickly, not going to keep you guys. Thank you so much for coming here, Millie. Like, honestly, you're so game and you're so cool, and it's been such a pleasure, honestly, watching you grow up for the very short corner of time that I've been able to see it. You're excellent, you're exquisite, you're wonderful. Thank you for coming and embracing the Girly Feminist. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here. And I do think your influence will bring a lot of young women who've never heard of feminism, and young people of minority genders, and young cis men. Like, I think you're going to bring a lot of attention to something that is, it's the stuff of life, it's the stuff of justice, it's the stuff of self-ownership, self-esteem, equality, connection, conversation, and that's what we need. So I really appreciate what you're doing, and I think it's magnificent.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to sob in my pillow tonight.
Hey, that's so what we happy. Want, all our guests to go home crying.
So before I do the closing titles, I just want to say a big thanks to King's Place. You're amazing. I'm so sorry, run over. I don't have a good sense of time due to ADHD, so you can't say it's my fault.
Yeah.
Big round of applause for the incredible Susan McKay. Mark! Grace Petrie! Woo! And everybody who put a question in, whether or not it was read out, thank you. Thank you for engaging, thank you for coming, and thank you for being the best audience in the world. Look forward to more exciting events with Millie Bobby Brown and the Guilty Feminist, if she wasn't just being polite. You have been absolutely wonderful. I've been Deborah Frances White. We've been the Guilty Feminist. Good night! I've been listening to the Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest star Susan McCullough, and our very special guest, Millie Bobby Brown, with music from Grace Petrie. Recording, her name is Chris Sharp. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Zalinski for the Scott Data Shop. Thanks to Gina and Rachel Cowan for everyone in King's Place and UTA, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com! These are insecurities which undermine them. I'm here with Deborah Front. I'm not here with Deborah Frances White. I'm here with myself. Feminism.
There you go. That's it.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.